On this episode of the podcast, I interview Andrew Mears, founder and CEO of Switched In. We talk about his journey into the startup world, the benefits of working in Newcastle, and Andrew's involvement in the launch of 1804. Hope you enjoy this episode. Welcome to the latest episode of Newy Tech People with Andrew Mears, CEO and founder of Switched In. Thanks for the time, Andrew.
Great. Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Local success story in Newcastle. Startup, or what was a startup, is continuing to grow.
Scale up now.
I think, yeah, it's a success, that's for sure. So for the people that haven't heard of you or heard of Switched In, can you give us a quick overview of who you are and then where Switched In is?
Yeah. So... I'm an engineer. I've been working in renewable energy for a long time. The idea for Switched In grew out of experience working around the world, solving problems in renewable energy sector.
Yeah.
And coming back to Australia, seeing what amazing potential that sector's got. You know, we've got the highest penetration of solar energy in the world. Like I think we just hit 2 million homes with solar on their rooftop, yet we're still pretty well passive consumers of energy and these fantastic enabling renewable energy products. So the whole notion of Switched In tried to address some of the barriers there to us doing new and more innovative things with our renewable energy. So we solve a problem in terms of scaling small-scale distributed energy resources. And that's really solar and batteries, but also loads, key loads that are important, such as air conditioners and pool pumps and electric vehicle charging points. And what we do is we have an industrial Internet of Things solution, which enables us to connect up all those different devices in your home and then coordinate them, firstly, to help you reduce your electricity costs, but then also to enable us to orchestrate those systems across the fleet. Now, that's really useful if you're a utility and you want to try to improve the way the electricity grid works. And that can unwrap new revenue opportunities for the owners of these systems.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. So, obviously, you've done the thing across the world and you've seen this problem. How did Switched In come about? How do you turn your knowledge of a problem into a business?
Yeah, well, look, you know, where we are now isn't where we started. Being an engineer, you know, I always had a couple of fancy algorithms in the back of my mind that I'd been working away at, and, you know, and I thought that, wow, you just got to bring a sexy algorithm into the marketplace and the world will just be your oyster. Well, but then we try to do it and you work out, actually, there's other bits and pieces of this puzzle that need to be in place before your sexy algorithm actually matters at all.
Yeah.
And those other problems are the problems that people are really concerned about. So early on, we pivoted from being a sexy algorithm company with, you know, machine learning and smart predictive algorithms to being a company that really solves some pretty boring but fundamental problems about communicating with and controlling lots and lots of small systems.
Yeah.
Yep, so it's been trial and error. We've done a few, that was a reasonably big pivot, but we've done a bunch of small pivots since then. So it's been a learning journey of success and failure and success and failure, and that's where we are.
That's a start story. What's the biggest challenge that you face today?
The biggest challenge, I guess the thing that keeps me awake at night is that we are a small startup and here we are working with some of the biggest companies in Australia, big power companies, network operators.
Yeah.
How do we keep our identity? How do we keep our product, our positioning? That's the biggest challenge I face. Branding is one thing, but just positioning and being able to claim a space is for a new startup in this type of sector is a big challenge.
That would be a big challenge, and I guess that's an evolving challenge, right? As your company evolves and the industry evolves and there's new players, I guess it'll be a continual challenge, right?
Well, that's right. I mean, you know, we're the shiny new toy in the marketplace, and that's easy for a startup compared to a big entrenched incumbent.
Yeah.
But eventually, we're going to become business as usual. How do we keep the ball rolling? So that's what keeps me awake at night.
It's interesting. It's interesting. And you made mention before about, you know, back in the algorithm days, machine learning and AI and things like that. Would that be part of growth plans for Switched In? Would is that those sort of options? How, what's Switched In look like in 5 years' time if you had to have a guess?
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, we do have those fancy, shiny algorithms, sexy algorithms. So, I mean, once we sort of got traction solving those boring, painful problems that everyone was worried about, we, of course, started to bring in the value add of, you know, machine learning, predictive forecasting. So, for us, that means, you know, having a learning system that learns how people consume electricity and at the same time forecasting what we think the solar generation is going to be on the site. And if you know in advance about changes in people's behavior or changes in generation, then you can optimize the way you use the battery and the way you manage your electricity loads. That's, I guess, that's part of our secret sauce now moving forward. And I guess the strategy, our strategy will be to become even smarter and better at that and stay ahead of the large incumbents.
Yeah, well, and that's always a challenge, Arat, because obviously if they're seeing you take a share or create a market for yourself, they're going to see an opportunity there and then try to play in that space. So that'd be a very real challenge going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, fortunately, you know, it is so dynamic, and the market, it's not just market opportunities now, it's also the whole political dimension to renewables in Australia and around the world. There's global imperatives that are driving this.
Yeah.
So it's not going to slow down soon. And I guess the challenge for innovators in this space is to keep picking those leading edge problems and keep moving quickly. So far, we're doing really well, and I think we're going to be able to keep that ball rolling for a long time.
Yeah, that's exciting. That's growth from, let's call it a product perspective. I know from a geographic perspective, we've discussed before off air about, you know, Switched In's growth. We're no longer Australia only. Care to share that story for our listeners?
June, July this year, we launched with one of our partners in Germany, and that's a product that they're going to market through Europe. So in that case, we're embedding our software inside a battery system that's got terrific potential. With another partner, we're going to be launching in a similar way in North America, January, February next year. And we've just started market development activities in India.
Wow.
Although that is as much about finding global partners as anything. So large companies who are interested in helping us take this product to the world. So we're also working with, just in terms of global outreach, with some large smart meter manufacturers. In fact, the largest in the world, a company called Landisgear.
Yeah.
So the promise there is to really go to global markets with those types of partners. So it is about channels for us, and managing those is going to be crucial. Fortunately, Australia is about the best country in the world to be doing this sort of stuff. So we've still got a lot of work to do here. Absolutely.
Yeah, so prove it here and then use your partners from a growth perspective for international opportunities.
Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, just because of the market context here and the high level of penetration, this is the test market for the world. So everyone is here trialing their products because they want lessons they're going to take elsewhere.
Yeah.
I mean, we're in this enviable position is that we're already here and we understand it.
Yeah.
So we're building products in the Australian market, which translate very nicely into most of the other major markets around the world. So
it's an exciting story.
Yeah.
Exciting story. Mate, let's pivot slightly from Switched In to yourself. Come from an engineering background. Prior to that, went through university. You've done a bachelor's, a master's and a PhD. Is that right?
Yeah, glutton for punishment.
Yeah. Let's say somebody else is, you know, has an idea, can see where you are right now. Like, I'd love to be where Andrew is one day. Mate, what's your opinion on, you know, formal education as a stepping stone?
Yeah, well, I mean, look, I'm older than most startup founders probably. I've always followed my gut and my passion, and, you know, there's been a pretty consistent stream sort of linking technology and development and environmental challenges. So right from the early days as an engineer at BHP, I was acutely aware of the tensions between the two, industrial development and environmental issues.
Yeah.
And that drove me to really explore other dimensions. And engineering is such a creative and enabling profession. It's a terrific, I mean, without that grounding, that academic training, you know, it'd be pretty hard to engage with the sorts of technologies that are going to be driving change and impact in these big issues.
I completely agree. And also provides a platform for when you are having conversations you're having now to have that strong base to work upon, obviously put you at an advantage, I would think.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I also probably took an unorthodox approach through my postgraduate studies in that they were always closely linked with applied problems in industry and technology innovation. So my master's, for example, was, you know, working with a company, making control systems,
yeah,
solving problems in around solar PV panel manufacturing.
Yeah.
My PhD was a bit of a shift away. It was biomedical, but again, I was working with a company that was building new implantable devices. And so, again, it was around the leading edge of innovation and commercialization.
Yeah.
So that's, I mean, it was a great way to build my skills, become, you know, an expert in an area, but at the same time be outside the box, I guess, not your classic academic type of PhD.
Yeah, and I think that's the key, right, is that, as you said, solving real-world problems, using that education, using that and making that linkage between formal education and real-world problems and linking those up. I think that's, you know, that's the key for people going forward as well, is looking at how you can actually do that. And it's a key for education providers, I think, is to make sure that education does link up to being able to solve real-world problems.
Absolutely. I mean, in Australia, we're only just starting to make the most of our PhDs, for example. Traditionally, it's been a path into academia rather than a path into industry and innovation. I mean, those two paths have always been there, but foremost in people's minds, you know, it wasn't always about going into, you know, tech innovation.
Yeah.
So I think that's changing. Certainly, for example, in Switched In, you know, I'm pushing my team to continue to develop themselves and study and engage. And probably one of our best engineers is probably going to leave us next year and go and start his PhD. And that's perfect. That's great.
That's one of those things, you know, if all works out well, you might be back at one point in time and have a new skill set or new knowledge to also be able to provide. So,
yeah.
You know, what goes around. Outside of formal education, when you're talking about either yourself or your employees, is there any other avenues that you'd encourage people that you've found valuable outside sort of formal universities that we're talking?
Oh, yeah. I mean, don't follow the path well trodden. Yeah. Find your own path, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, a few times through my career, I've taken significant pivots personally. You know, and it's in hindsight, you know, I can see a fairly consistent, you know, values driven, you know, path that I've taken. But don't be afraid to step outside of the normal pathway.
Yeah, and give something a try, right? Like as you said, I would say out of most, you know, startup or entrepreneurs, you haven't followed a traditional path. Not that it really is a traditional path, but, you know, if you had to say there's a startup path these days, people are talking about uni dropouts and people like that have gone and created their own company. You've obviously been successful going your own path and finding your own way. So I think, you know, it's a testament to say, hey, there is no one right path to create a startup or a successful startup, right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, and you know, other people's, you know, these are the stories, you know, uni dropouts, starting thing. I mean, fine. I mean, that worked for those people. Don't assume it's a strategy that's going to apply to your own choices. Just, I mean, uni, I found my university education to be invaluable.
Yeah.
I've never stopped learning, even on the job, whether that's informally just being open and, you know, engaging with mentors who might be older or younger than yourself, might be from different backgrounds. You know, you've got to be ready to accept that you don't know everything, and yeah, that's what lifelong learning is all about.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I'd love to touch on that. If you had to give advice for somebody to try to find a mentor, so I think mentorship is obviously invaluable. You've made really strong mention of it there. If you had to give advice to somebody, how would they go about finding a mentor, finding the right person?
Well, it's you've got to network, yeah, and then you've just got to ask people. Getting Switched In started, I mean, you know, I know a lot about renewable energy, yeah. But, and I've started businesses, but there was some very different things about Switched In, you know, raising early stage capital, things like that, which I had not done before. I really needed some guidance. Now, in all the people that I asked for a coffee to pick their brains for half an hour, I was never, ever turned down, not once. And I would say I've bought 100 hundreds of people coffee.
Yeah.
I've never, ever been turned down. So people are very, it's human nature, I think, to want to engage with passionate people, because, you know, you've almost always got something interesting to say if you're passionate about what you're doing.
Yeah.
So if you've got a passion and you want to develop yourself, and you think that you found someone who might be able to help you, or you might not even know whether they can help you, but you know they've done great things, just ask them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a great answer. If I had to talk that slightly more specific in crafting a message, I think it's a phenomenal story, and it does come down to sheer numbers, right? If you're having that many copies, you can, that many relationships, opportunities will present themselves. If you have to create, how does somebody go about actually creating that message to say, hey, I would like X amount of your time? You're obviously talking about some busy, successful people. I imagine that you'd be hit up yourself about, you know, you're having some success, you're a busy man at the moment, you've only got so many hours in the day. What's the differentiator for you to accept a copy versus this seems like it might be a waste of my time or not something I can pursue right now?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I think if you're looking, if there's someone who you think you'd like to learn something from, you know, I think you've got to be prepared to build a relationship. So, you know, don't just ask them cold, you know, come and mentor me and whatever. Start by offering them something, you know. A coffee is a good start. A few people will turn you down for a coffee, but what they're really looking for is a slice of your passion. Yeah.
Yeah.
And have some, you know, go into it with an ask. Yeah. If you ask them something which is meaningful to you, then they'll see that you value the time you're spending with them. Yeah. If you just want to have a chat, then, and you haven't prepared or you haven't come into it in a way which they can see is important to you, then they're not going to think you're valuing the time that you spend with them.
That's great advice. Great advice.
So the key thing is, you know, Make sure that you clearly value the time that they give you, and they'll give you more time.
Yeah, and as you said, provide a little bit of value. Make sure you've done your research. If you can provide a little bit of value, buy a coffee, that type of thing. I think it's the small things that matter, right? And it's the intent behind it. Say, hey, you have done your research. You're not just, you know, catching up for a chat.
That's right. And if it's not a good fit too, just, you know, politely leave it and come back later on. It might not be a good fit right then and there, but, you know, that's just the first touch. Come back again later on with, you know, another question or another coffee and see how it goes.
Yeah, I think that's great advice, and I think some listeners could get some really good handy hints out of that. Mate, you've got a wealth of experience, and you've done a lot of travel lately. From an educational standpoint, like outside of formal education, outside of education, but we're talking about reading books or podcasts, are there things that, you know, you're a continual learner, or somebody that's, you know, never stopped learning? Are there books or podcasts out there that you listen to on a regular basis, or a book you've read recently that you would recommend for people?
Yeah, we're in a book at the moment called How Not to Give a Shit. Really good book, actually. Yeah. I guess I don't read a lot of sort of management books and things like that. I've read all the usual sort of startup things, you know, lean startup, and that's been great. I like going to meetups, especially at the start. Just being part of the local ecosystem, connecting with events and contributing. Yeah. So being able to sort of put yourself out there and do that pitch when it was the scariest thing in the world, you know, those really create so many great learning opportunities.
Yeah. And then any podcasts or any other things you use from an educational perspective or blogs?
Yeah, I follow just in general, you know, I get my weekly Crunchbase report. It's great to see what's actually happening. You know, follow the money. Usually tells you where things are happening, as well as sort of the domain media.
Yeah.
Renew Economy is great for the Australian context here in Australia.
Nice, mate. That's good. And yeah, actually, my mention over there, just some domain specific content's always valuable, right?
Yeah.
Find out what else is going on, get out of your own bubble sometimes, which is helpful.
Yep.
So you've gone on all this learning. If you had to wheel it back and say, what's a key learning that you teach a younger version of yourself? You've pivoted a number of times, you've learned a number of things. Is there any sort of key information you'd turn a younger Andrew Mears?
Well, yeah. Well, I probably should have done this sooner, I reckon.
What stopped you doing it sooner?
Well, I had other great jobs.
Yeah.
So I was never unhappy with it, but, you know, I guess my expectations around the impact that I can have on the contribution I can make through this type of vehicle, you know, it's exceeded my expectations, right? So, you know, my previous jobs were, you know, working, you know, with the UN and World Bank and NGOs all around the world. And, you know, that's definitely a pathway to have an impact. I was always interested in how, you know, private sector and innovation, tech innovation can contribute to addressing some of these big environmental challenges. And I guess I've been pleasantly surprised that Switched In and this sort of model for having an impactful life, it, you know, it's exceeded my expectations. So I guess, younger Andrew Mears, I probably would have said do this sooner.
Yeah. And it's hard, as you said, you made mention there, you weren't unhappy in a role. And I think there's a lot of people that are out there and they're like, I'm okay with my role. I don't hate my role, so I don't need to leave and scratch my own itch. But there is that sort of that itch there or a desire there to, or an idea there that you want to explore, right?
Well, yeah, that's right. I mean, it always takes something to sort of kick off a change because you get comfortable, whether that's good comfortable or lazy comfortable. I don't know, but at some point something kicks you in to have to change. For me, I wasn't unhappy doing what I was doing. I was just looking for a way to make a better impact, cut down on the travel a little bit, but that doesn't really work out that way either. it's not like this was an overnight decision either. You know, I had the idea for Switched In was burning away in the back of my mind for 10 years, and you know, got to a position where it was a good opportunity, and so took a leap.
Nice. You may mention travel just then. You may mention previous about local startups. A topic you and I are both passionate about is the Newcastle tech scene. Someone like yourself to grow, it would have been very easy for you to you know, grow a startup somewhere else, right? Newcastle's got some challenges. Hey, what's your thoughts on the current state of the Newcastle tech scene or startup scene?
I mean, I really started to connect. Newcastle's my hometown, right? So I've got a long-term connection. But I was away for 20 years. Came home 4 years ago, started Switched In. And even at that stage, there was, you know, very, compared to what was going on in Sydney and Melbourne, it was absolutely nascent. In that 4 years, we've seen really Newcastle develop a very strong and respected identity as a regional startup hub. Now, people say regional because they don't really understand what's happening here, right? Yeah. Regional is not less than, you know, capital city, right? It's just different. And I think the key qualities there are that we have this amazing pool of talent that don't want to leave. Yeah. They don't want to have to go away somewhere else.
Yeah.
We've also got regional comparative advantages. And fortunately for me, a big slice of that is around the resource sector and energy and logistics. But, you know, we've got proven track records in a whole range of different areas. We've got great universities. We've got, you know, CSIRO here. So again, which is relevant to my area.
Yeah.
We've got terrific medical research groups. There's all the essential ingredients. Yeah. But I think the best thing for me is that it's sort of the perfect size. You know, it's a Goldilocks town in the sense that, you know, it's not too big that you can't be known.
Yeah.
And it's not too small that you can't find everyone you need. Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah, so look, I've been asked a number of times by investors and customers why we're in Newcastle, and I can't think of a reason why we shouldn't be. It's a great place.
And it is a great place. Mm-hmm. And I think, as you said, the tech scene is growing, the startup scene is growing.
Yeah.
You're a co-founder and current director of 1804.
Yep.
Mate, do you want to give people, just the people that don't know of 1804, a quick overview of...
quick plug?
Yeah. A, what it is, and then B, where it came from.
Yeah, well, look, 1804, I co-founded with James Giblin. James was himself looking to start a venture, and I was kicking off Switched In. All this great talent in town, and we were both trying to find people to work with. Co-working spaces were a bit too generic for us. We really thought there was an opportunity to build a community around clean tech and smart cities. And so that's how really it got started. We got $15,000 from the city to kick it off. We had premises lined up in the CBD, but that fell through. And fortunately, CSIRO gave us a bit of office space to get started. We filled that space in 3 months. And it took us then another 18 months to find where we are now, which is a great building on the TAFE campus in Newcastle West. And so that we now house 8 different companies, 45, I think, employees. So 45 jobs that wouldn't otherwise be here, tech jobs. I think we did a back of the envelope sort of aggregate valuation of around $70 to $80 million worth of companies.
Yeah.
So it's been terrific. I think part of the key differentiator is that it's really just very much focused on growth startups in the clean tech and smart city space. And I think that resonates a lot also with the direction the city's going, the local council. In parallel, of course, there's been all these other great initiatives coming up in the ecosystem more broadly. And anyway, it's a very exciting time. And, you know, I think 1804 is going to be a part of it for some time.
I completely agree. And I think it's just a testament to the people involved, but also just to the fact that can be successful in Newcastle.
Yeah.
And that's a pretty niche market, right? And to say that success and to lead to, you know, $70, $80 million valuation of companies in a 3-4 year period is... it's pretty phenomenal when you have a look at that.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that's about to skyrocket too, because a lot of those companies are just hitting growth stage.
High growth.
And so we're going to see big shifts. Yeah, but look, we're keen to grow. There's a whole couple of floors left in that building we've yet to fill. So, we're always on the lookout for other companies who are interested in joining, or people or individuals who just, ready to make a start and want to be part of a group of people who are thinking of that.
I agree. Slightly off tangent, same subject. If somebody was to do something similar to 1804 in a different demographic or different industry, how would you, if you had to say some advice to for them to get something like that off the ground, is there any advice you would give?
I think there needs to be a good reason to do it where you're doing it. Certainly in the case of 1804, there was clear links with sort of the regional's comparative advantage. So that's a good reason to choose a particular vertical if you want to focus on a particular vertical. Otherwise, you really, you need to have a large enough group of people who are going to create that or build that straight off. So, the success of 1804, I think, basically is because we built on the back of existing capabilities in the region.
Yeah.
I don't know how it would have gone if, we perhaps were somewhere far out west in an agricultural area and we tried to do the sort of vertical we had here. Or if we try to do fintech here or something like that, you've got to think, well, what connects that with this place?
Yeah, play to your strengths, play to the local strengths.
Yeah.
Last question on Newcastle. Where do you see Newcastle in the 5 years' time?
In 5 years' time, I think we're going to see an amazing transformed city. The university's moving into the city in a big way. We're going to have a young, dynamic population who are tech savvy and well educated and have got global outlooks. I would like to see Newcastle really on the global map as an innovation centre. I think it's going to be a major driver for local economic development. I think we're already seeing a lot of innovators exiting Sydney for regional centres, and I think that's a trend that's just going to grow and grow. And when you think about what we've got here, we've got great talent, great lifestyle. We're used to dealing with global markets. It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, you add on great opportunities and it's a full suite, right?
Yeah.
And that's probably what Newcastle had been lacking in the past, but those opportunities are really starting to come to fruition.
Yeah.
Nice. Anything else you'd like to share individually with about Andrew or Switched In?
Yeah, okay. I mean, I guess a key part of the journey building Switched In, because, I'm hoping that people who are interested in coming and working for us are going to listen to this, is that a key lesson I guess I've had is, you read these books and there's this catch cry, culture beats strategy. And frankly, I never really understood what that meant until Switched In. And when you've got a team that everyone owns, feels like they really own the business, and work happens, people get together sort of almost just intrinsic connections, and jobs get done and product sort of shapes itself almost autonomously.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just this, that's when you realize what that statement means. So you can spend all the time you want making business plans and doing strategic planning and all that sort of stuff, but if you don't have culture that enables innovation to be core and people have a sense that they own that whole process, it's not going to work. So fortunately, I think that's what we've got in Switched In. So I'm really proud of what we've made and people enjoy working there, and that's part of the secret to our success, I think.
Oh, really is. And you couldn't have been on the growth curve you've had without that success, right? To be successfully building a culture, you wouldn't have had that growth you've had without it. So
absolutely.
That's the proof's in the pudding right there.
Yeah.
Mate, thank you very much for your time.
Pleasure. Cheers. Great.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the podcast. To stay up to date with everything happening in the Newcastle tech scene, jump on our website, newitechpeople.com.au. This is where you'll find all our podcasts, show notes, and also the events happening locally to Newcastle. Until next time.